and welcome back to the Go Home Show podcast for our first ever Monday Night Raw review from the 28th of September. I am joined by your favourite journalist, Michael the Crusher Henson. Michael, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for writing that in the script.
You wrote it yourself. I hate it, but it's sticking now. It was a busy night of action. Let's get straight into it. We open the show with four legends: Christian, Ric Flair, Shawn Michaels, and The Big Show standing front and center in the ring. They introduce Drew McIntyre and essentially kind of excuse themselves for helping Drew McIntyre to win a 5-on-1 handicap ambulance match the night before at Clash of Champions. This was a very, very cold opening, I thought, but it did lead to some intrigue at the end of the show where Drew McIntyre issued an open challenge for the title. What were your thoughts on this segment, Crush?
So I enjoyed it, to be fair. I always like seeing the legends get involved. It's good to have them back round. I'd love to see Christian have one last run as well, but that's a separate point altogether. But no, I think it helps develop the story, because obviously people were saying that Randy might get traded, but this just goes to show that Randy's still in the very thoughts of the Raw creative and maybe challenging Drew again at Hell in a Cell. And obviously he issued an open challenge for later in the night, and that was for anyone who hadn't challenged him for the title, which we'll get onto later.
Yeah, I have to say, I was very much like, right, this feud's done, let's move on after Clash of Champions. But actually, it leads very easily into Randy can say, you beat me essentially in a 5-on-1 handicap match. Oh, one more shot, and I want it to be inside a Hell in a Cell. You don't get any help, you've got no friends. You beat me 1-on-1, and then we'll finally get kind of the big blow-off match where we'll either see a victory via Claymore or via RKO or punt, because obviously the first match at SummerSlam was won by Backslide. So I think this will be the blow-off match at Hell in a Cell. At least I hope so, because I'm starting to get a little weary of this feud. But then we moved on to the first match of the night, and it was another throwback to Clash of Champions. It was the repeat of Asuka versus Zelina Vega for the Raw Women's Champion. For the Raw Women's Championship, I was a big fan of this match from Clash of Champions. I was very nervous when I saw that it was going to be done again on Raw. But actually, I will admit, I was proven quite happily wrong. This was also a very, very good match, and they got a bit more time.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm a big fan of Zelina Vega getting her shot in the spotlight. Obviously, she's been a manager for so long, but as I mentioned on yesterday's Clash of Champions review, that when she was working in independents and other brands, she was a very, very talented wrestler. So I'm glad to see she got more time. Again, it's showing that her frustrations can get the better of her. Asuka obviously picking up the win. But again, really good match. Go check it out on WWE's YouTube, the network when it comes on, or wherever you watch your wrestling goodness. Yeah, the finish was a moonsault into an Asuka lock, and again, a tap out. So again, it plays into that story of no matter what you do to Asuka, she can get you and twist the match straight into her hands within seconds.
Yeah, no, this was a good segment. And then after the match, we had Andrade coming out and gave Zelina Vega all sorts of noise, saying that she was trying to blame them for their failures, but actually it was her. He then also called out Angel Garza, saying that he was the weak link of the team, which I found quite surprising. They either did split up or they teased the split up a few weeks ago. But then at Clash of Champions, they were working like a really well-oiled machine, and it's probably the best I've seen them as a team. Obviously, Angel Garza was injured. The news seems to be that the injury is not as serious as first feared, and it's a hip injury, I believe. He tweeted saying, essentially in response to the promo from Andrade, saying, oh, I'm the weak link. I'll be back soon. You're thinking, see if you say it to my face. However, this also led to an Andrade open challenge to see if anyone could take him on, which led to Limitless Keith Lee entering the ring for a good match of former NXT champions, but I wouldn't call it a great match, in my opinion. But what did you think, Crush?
Yeah, so again, wasn't 100% on Andrade running down Zelina Vega, but hey-ho, it furthers that storyline there. And we love good storytelling on the Go Home Show podcast. But yeah, I'm good to see our first ever guest on the Go Home Show podcast, Keith Lee, getting a match. I mean,
picking up a dub without disqualification as well. He actually pinned someone.
So obviously, he'd been involved in the Drew Randy storyline a few weeks back. So I think now he needs like a few wins to sort of build him up into Hell in a Cell, get him sort of a storyline, finish that storyline, and then maybe look to push towards a title, whatever that may be, more towards the Royal Rumble going into 2021, just to really build up and then potentially look into maybe a main title shot or WrestleMania next year, whichever one that may be. Obviously, we've got the draft soon because that will change. But yeah, it was a spirit bomb into the pin. Keith Lee...
From nowhere as well, wasn't it? It was Andrade was very much on top. Essentially looked like he was trying to set him up for the Hammerlock DDT. And then Keith Lee just yeeted him up.
It's just what Keith Lee does. Keith Lee is a monster and I would not like to mess with him. And then, yeah, we went on into the 24/7 title backstage. Obviously, on my close personal friends, R-Truth, another episode that you need to check out, and an interview, very good interview, where he talks about Brock.
Where can you see that interview?
You can see it on Sport for Wrestling on YouTube. Thanks to the plug, Chris. But he was backstage. He was playing chess against Little Jimmy. He beat Little Jimmy, and he feels confident enough to challenge Drew McIntyre. Like, right, here we go. The ninjas then hand Truth Akira's black belt, but then Tozawa sneaks up behind Truth to win the title. The ninja then rolls up Akira Tozawa to win the title, and it reveals himself to be Drew Gulak. At least he's not in full gear and stretching this time. But then Truth beats Gulak. Gulak, fuck me, I play too much COD. But then Truth beats Gulak for the title for his 41st title reign. R-Truth, the GOAT.
Yeah, this was, I mean, we get that the 24/7 championship is obviously like the comedic release of the show, I guess. It's just mad and insane and hilarious. I do like that R-Truth is doing everything he can to give more people TV time. Obviously, Akira Tozawa and Drew Gulak. Drew Gulak had a really good little mini push with Daniel Bryan around WrestleMania time, wasn't it? And then kind of fell off from there. It's good to see them on TV. Drew Gulak does comedy very well. Akira Tozawa has been very good in the ninja role, despite how ridiculous it is. But this was fine. This was good comedic relief to kind of keep the show moving. And then we moved in to a brand new tag team. Things you love to see. Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke are a tag team. And they got a victory over Lana and Natty with a pump knee strike in, again, a very TV tag match. It kind of, it was a bit paint by numbers, but it did what it had to do.
Yeah, well, I said to you before we start recording that I wanted to talk about this, and I am really interested to see where they go with Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke, because obviously Mandy was with Sonya, and then we had that match, the hair, not it was supposed to be heavy hair, but then it was loser leaves the company, and obviously Sonya left, and then Miz trades her to Raw. So I'm interested to see where it can go, because obviously they're both from similar background, the fitness model background, both good workers in their own right. Obviously Mandy has shown what she can do. Obviously there's a lot of similarities with Trish Stratus as well. A lot of people online clamoring for that dream match. Obviously when probably about a year or two ago now when she first broke through on the main roster. I can't remember. It's a long time when you're 27. And obviously Dana Brooke, we've seen glimpses of her with Charlotte in the past and then when she's been on her own. But again, like, she's a very good worker in her own right. So I'm looking forward to see where they go with that. Obviously, Lana and Natalya wanted the titles handed to them because Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler couldn't compete at Clash of Champions. Adam Pearce, like, nah, if you want a future shot, you have to beat the newest tag team. And of course, he didn't. So after the match, Mandy and Dana were backstage and they said that Nia and Shayna should keep an eye out for them in the future. So yeah, if they challenge for it, good luck to him. It's another tag team in the women's tag team division. Obviously, we lost Bayley and Sasha a few weeks back. So yeah, really looking forward to where this can go. And it leads us nicely into the next segment with new music and a new look.
Yes, there was another victim of the CFO dollar music. How would you describe it? Music culls, I guess, because there's a new music deal within WWE, isn't there? CFO dollar are out and they're doing the music in-house now. So we had Aleister Black with brand new music and a brand new look with two different coloured eyes, if I saw correctly, taking on Kevin Owens in a match with a very, very funky finish.
Yeah, so to start with, both men are going backwards and forwards. They're countering each other. Both men don't want to lose this match. Then Aleister Black got into an argument with the ref, Drake Younger, and he accidentally struck him while the ref tried to pull him off Kevin Owens. So he's called for the disqualification. Kevin Owens isn't happy with that. He hits the stunner, match, and then segment over.
Yeah, it was a bit strange. I understand that they're trying to show Aleister Black is completely unhinged. And I would assume this would be leading to a no DQ match at Hell in a Cell between Aleister Black and KO, because obviously neither of them were on Clash of Champions. It was a weird finish, but again, I think when you are still a few weeks out of a pay-per-view and this is TV, and you don't want one person going over the other person, I think this was fine. It wasn't amazing to watch, but I understand why you would do it, and that kind of it does its job. It builds Aleister Black as this unhinged, almost lunatic now, and also Kevin Owens as still as this kind of fan favorite, kind of a renegade rogue kind of talent. And yeah, it was good. Again, it was good, not great, but I do appreciate that this was the show after a pay-per-view, so there is a lot of resetting and kind of very basic storytelling at this point, rather than the kind of big feuds as we get towards a pay-per-view. That then led us back from there into the 24/7 title, where we had a legitimate triple threat match for the title. And actually, this was a good wrestling match. It was again a fairly standard triple threat match. You had what you would describe as the two heels teaming up on the babyface and R-Truth. That teaming up, unsurprisingly, eventually fell apart. Gulak tried to throw Tozawa out of the ring and ended up just yeeting him into the ref.
Yeet.
And in all fairness, though, she sold it well as well. She was selling the back for the rest of the match. Gulak then put R-Truth into the Gulak, and we see Tozawa slowly climb into the top. Truth reversed, Tozawa sent on Gulak, and he got every single percent out of this. He completely potatoed Gulak. It's a very good sent on, but you'll be feeling that one in the morning. Truth then front suplexed Tozawa, and then, of course, like his hero, his childhood hero, John Cena, he attitude adjusted Gulak onto Tozawa for the win, retaining his title. This was a good match. Again, it had enough of the comedy stuff that you'd expect to enjoy it. It didn't try to overshadow anything that was coming up later on. It was enjoyable. It was good fun. It filled the 10 minutes that it was meant to. Which then actually leads us on to a more serious storyline. Earlier in the show, we, of course, as all you can have with Rey Mysterio, we have the classic Rey Mysterio family drama. Rollins shows texts between Rey Mysterio's daughter, Aliyah, and Buddy Murphy. Dominic then attacked Buddy Murphy for potentially snaking his sister to set up a match later on in the night. So we come to this match, and it is Dominic versus Buddy Murphy. Now, Dominic, for me, has been the surprise package of 2020 so far. And where can you see that episode?
On Sport Wrestling YouTube or any good podcasting platform.
Good plug. So, this is a good match. Dominic is doing well. He's performing at the level that we've come to expect from him, especially for someone so young and so inexperienced, especially on TV. He's doing very, very well. Eventually, he decides that just beating Buddy Murphy isn't enough, and he goes to grab a kendo stick. Aliyah then comes running out from the back, begging him not to, which causes a distraction, which then allows Buddy Murphy, with a good pull of the pants, to roll up Dominic for a 1-2-3. Again, this storyline has gone on for a long time now. I don't know if I'm a fan of the Aliyah Buddy Murphy kind of pseudo romance angle, but it is giving Dominic Mysterio a chance to show more range, and it certainly showed him as a lot more aggressive. Before, he's been very kind of that typical baby face where he's the underdog, like, come on Dominic, let's go. This is him kind of having a bit more of a personal energy to it. He was the aggressor in this. He was accepting that he would have lost by disqualification to grab the kendo stick and beat on Buddy Murphy. It's an interesting angle to go down. I don't know what you think, Crush.
Yeah, it is an interesting angle to go down, because obviously it's the whole like sort of romance storyline. Obviously the texts were, I think it was Buddy sort of apologising, and then it was Eli saying happy birthday, by the way, and stuff like that. So yeah, I don't know where it's going to go, but I'm intrigued, if you get me. Because obviously there's so many different angles. It's Seth against Ray, Seth against Dominic, Murphy against Dominic, and then you throw Aliyah into the mix. Obviously, he's been teased after the steel cage match and a few other times. So yeah, really intrigued to see where this goes. But then we have two final segments left. It starts backstage, the second to last segment, with the Hurt Business in catering. Mustafa Ali runs into the group near the locker room, and they get into an argument, and then Apollo Crews and Ricochet back him up, which then leads to a match, because MVP told Crews that this has to end and he'll never stop the Hurt Business or take the US title away from Bobby Lashley. Obviously, they're all motivated by MVP's words to get into a big fight. So they brought their A game into the match. In the end, the ring was clear for Ali to hit a tornado DDT into a 450 splash for the win over MVP. And if I'm honest, as much as I love the Hurt Business, because I think they are amazing, I'm kind of glad that Mustafa Ali is getting his spotlight back, because we've seen after he broke through in the cruiserweight tournament many moons ago that he's an extremely talented wrestler and needs to be up there. Obviously, there was teases of him being the hacker and stuff, but he's been in main event a few weeks. Obviously, he's put his thoughts on Twitter about that situation. So it's finally good to see him back on the main card and against the Hurt Business and picking up the win against a dominant group. Obviously, the Retribution angle was hinted again. The Retribution logo flickered throughout the match, but nothing really happened. That's supposedly due to some sort of COVID situation or whatever social media wants to believe. But there's no official confirmation on that yet. But yeah, Chris, what do you make of this?
Yeah, it was, again, I said this yesterday. I think I'm done with the Apollo Crews faction versus Hurt Business. However, I do agree, seeing Mustafa Ali get the win, look strong, I'm a big, big fan of. He is, again, he's one of those heavily underutilized members of the roster. He is just a really good, fiery babyface. Even if you don't see him as a title holder or a consistent title holder, he is like, he's perfect for chasing the US title, for example. The match was good. The finish wasn't as clean as it could have been. Obviously, the DDT wasn't as tight as it could have been. But actually, it's a good win for the baby faces. It's a nice feel-good moment. I'd like to see the Hurt Business move on to something else. If it's going to be Hurt Business versus Retribution, I'm all in on that. I appreciate we have to wait 2 weeks for Retribution to come back, as we should do. That's just the right decision. I'd like to see that, and then we can see Apollo Crews, Ricochet, and Mustafa Ali maybe going after tag titles, because we know there is a lack of tag teams on the Raw side at the moment, which beautifully, if I may say so myself, brings us on to the main event. Because Dolph Ziggler had teased earlier in the night that he had someone in mind for the open challenge. Drew enters the ring. He stands there. He says, right, if you've got it, step up. And there's nothing. And Drew, as he's good in his little comedy moment, starts chatting to the staff. He asks Charles Robinson how his day's been. And suddenly we hear Dolph Ziggler's music hit.
I'm here.
And you hear, wow. Good. That was beautiful. That is the highlight of the podcast so far. We hear Drew say, no, I said to someone who hadn't had an opportunity yet. Which then leads Dolph Ziggler to introduce the man with the greatest music in WWE at the moment. Glorious Robert Roode returns, and he looks great. Now, these two obviously were former tag team champions together. I am hoping that they will be reforming and re-going back after the tag team gold, because it gives us a good way to build up the tag team division. I think Street Profits are they're running out of competition very quickly, especially with Angel Garza going down. So they need someone. I think Ziggler and Robert Roode, whether they beat the Street Profits or not, they're a good way to elevate the division. Robert Roode comes out. We get every second that we can of his music, and I love every second of it. And then we go into what is a very, very good match. And actually, it was a far closer match than I was expecting when I saw Robert Roode come out. What did you think, Crush?
Yeah, as I say, I was glad to see Robert Roode back. Obviously, Drew against Bobby Roode's back then was very good at one of the NXT takeovers. I can't remember exactly which one it was because it's slipped my mind. But when Drew won the title and got attacked by Adam Cole after it, which, again, whole another perfect segment, which I could talk about for ages and ages. But I'm glad to see him back because, one, he's got one of the best music in WWE at this moment in time. And two, he's a good worker. So, obviously, I can't remember why he had that time off, but he's back now. It was a very close match. There was a near fall after a glorious DDT, and unfortunately fell down to the Claymore after that. But yeah, like you say, there's spots in the Raw tag team division. Obviously, this can build Drew up to Hell in a Cell with different challenges each week. It might go into a triple threat against Dolph and Robert Roode at Hell in a Cell. Mug likes to be one-on-one Randy Orton, but one can dream. And then we had a... how do I describe it? Like, I'm okay with this because it's very creative. It is good creative from WWE. Just the execution wasn't as I'd have liked to have it. So Randy Orton was supposedly left the arena after his segment on the start of the show. But then he reappears as a janitor backstage, and he goes into the Legends Lounge and reveals himself. So obviously it's Big Show, Ric Flair, Christian, and Shawn Michaels all in there playing poker. He turns the lights, he puts his night vision goggles on, turns the lights off. And then you hear just this chair going to town, basically. But it sounds like he's going to town on the poker chips. So obviously you don't get any shouts or anything. But then the lights come on and they're all laid out. So I'd have liked to have heard some sort of groans and moans of how much it's hurting. But we didn't get it. But it's not the end of the world, because I like how it is creative, and because everyone thought that was it, like the Legends came back to end that part. But this again is re-bringing it back up and how it could potentially affect further title matches. So really like the creative, not 100% on the execution, but that was this week's Monday Night Raw review.
Very quickly, I think my favourite bit of it was afterwards, the refs come running. Why are refs always the first ones there? Like, there's no medical staff. A 71-year-old man has just been attacked by Randy Orton with a steel chair, and the refs are the first ones getting there, regardless of the medics. But by the by, the refs are running there to make sure that everyone's okay. And Randy Orton is, what, 6'4", 6'5", 250 pounds? A 6'4", 250-pound janitor with his head just down slightly is stood outside the crime scene, points at it, and all the refs are like, yep, that's just Big Joe the janitor. That's no one. That's nothing to worry about. And they all go screaming off, and Randy Orton has just stood there as the copyright logo comes up. Yeah, you're right. It was a good idea. I understand why they couldn't show anything, because obviously that's a protect fire. It could have been executed better, but it was, again, it helps move the feud along. Let's keep it moving. Let's not overthink this. It was good. It was a good show. I enjoyed it. It was a very typical post-pay-per-view show, especially a pay-per-view where there are no title changes happening. So, yeah, I appreciate it. I understand it. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure to leave us a review on the podcast if you've enjoyed. Follow us on Twitter at GoHomeShowPod. And check us out on YouTube, which is Sporth Wrestling, for all our interviews. Our last two with R-Truth and Jey Uso. Crusher has come into his own. I really, really recommend them. They are very, very good. We'll be back on Thursday for a double episode where we review NXT and AEW before going on to the main podcast with a full team. Will Brazier and Elliot Ames will be back. So we will catch you then. Now let's go home.